Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, Chair.
Hey,
Yes,
how are you?
Good
good
morning, good morning, good morning, Chair.
morning, morning, morning,
Good
Afakadi.
morning, good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you very much. Can we have a moment of silence for the father of our Honorable Member Horn, who passed on this weekend?
Recording in progress.
May he rest in eternal peace. Thank you very much. We received the bad news that Honorable Horn's father passed on over the weekend. He will be buried tomorrow in Bloemfontein. Our hearts and prayers are with Honorable Horn, his family and friends. Members, you are all welcome. Everybody on the virtual platform, you are welcome. A special welcome to Advocate MTB, who will be doing the presentation or leading the team that will be doing the presentation. We also welcome the DG, Advocate Doc Mashabane, and the National Commissioner of Correctional Services, who are also here with us today. I received a letter from Advocate MTB that this is going to be a very long presentation, and they are asking for 4.5 hours to make
Yeah.
a presentation. So we do not have that time. I think our planning has not been that good, because when we were under the impression that the first 2 weeks, it will be preparations for the BRRR as we always do, and that there would be no sittings. So our preparation was affected by the fact that we started with sittings already. We will receive the presentation that we can be able to today, because we must also make room for members who will be collected from the parks at 12:30, so that they can have time to move towards the house. They are going to be collected at 12:30. So what I would suggest, honorable members and Advocate MTB, is that maybe you deal with the first proclamation, and then we allow members to ask questions. And then we will at least by 12, we should be done with that presentation, because we don't want to say we're giving you 5 minutes or what. We just say, let's deal it through the proclamations as you have divided it. And then what we can do is that we should, when we come back early January, we should have a special day where we will deal with the remainder of what is outstanding. And I think one of the issues that we did not do, last time we had this presentation, the NPA and the Hawks were also present. I think we should structure it that way, that the next time we have the presentation, the NPA and the Hawks would also be present, and we would also ask that, as they have done, the departments also present. Honorable Breitenbach. Also be present. I think that is the proposal that I'm making, Honorable Jelle.
Thank you,
Go
Chair.
ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, Chair. I was also maybe in future, if we have to do justice on this, if we can separate them, like one day we give it for to Correctional Services, strictly, and then the other day we give it to the department. I'm not sure. It's my proposal for future dealing with this education.
Okay, thank you very much. I think what let's do it in that way to ensure that we do justice to the work that has been done. Are there any other members who would want to speak on this matter before we allow Honorable Ntivi? No. Advocate Ntivi, over to you. I think you are going, are you going to start this proclamation R8 of 2016?
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We appreciate the opportunity to appear before the Honorable Committee to present on our investigations. Honorable Chair, thank you. The letter that we sent was really to indicate the magnitude of the presentations we have, and we would in no way seek to direct the committee on how it accommodates us. We just really indicated the estimated time, and we appreciate how the chair really would allow us to present. We have structured the presentations in that way. We will start off with the one pack has got the presentations on DCS, excuse me. And then the other pack is on the presentations in the Department of Justice. Honorable Chair, you'll see there that we start off with the proclamation 18-2016, which is the ESS, and then proclamation 20 of 2016 MSW. Then we've covered the PPE in the DCS space. Then we come to the fencing, and then the one part of the investigations that were in the KZN. And number six there covers the very old present investigations, with the committee's permission, we are prepared to present, but we thought we'd just include them for completeness of the investigations we did at DCS at SIU. But those are really so old that if there are any questions we can take without really formally presenting them, with the exception of just giving, you know, a view that particularly the Busasa one, that we are really happy that the prosecution is now underway. Without wasting time, Honorable Chair, I will just introduce a few of our members. I'm joined by Dr. Wells, who's the Chief Legal, Mr. Khanyako, the spokesperson and head of communications and stakeholders, Advocate Fisahi, who is the team member of Dr. Wells, and Honorable Chair, we are also joined by the lead investigators in this, Mr. Lekheto, who is the chief national, is on study leave, is writing exams today. So we thought it's appropriate that the lead investigators who are really doing the investigation would lead the presentation, and they have prepared. So it's Mr. Reddy, who will be doing the DCS fence. If we have time for the justice ones, he'll be doing the courts, the building of courts. And then we've got Mr. Jonathan Chetty, who will be doing the DCS and KZN. And then we've got Miss Naomi Jose, who will be doing the DCS, ESS, MSW, and PEEs. And then we've got Mr. Stemele, who will be doing the Office of the State Attorney. We've got Miss Natasha Nondier, who will be doing the investigations in the Masters. With the presentations, moving the presentation is Ms. Gumbi. We've got other members, Honorable Chair, in the interest of time, who are part of the teams that the lead investigators are leading, in case there are questions that they could be involved in, but we'll introduce them as and when they need to come to the stage. So, Honorable Chair, I will really not be spending a lot of time on the legislative mandate. in our vision, which the committee is well vested and aware with. Slide number 6 deals with the outcomes. As I said, we will be spending quite a lot of time on some of the outcomes, just to indicate to the committee where we are on each and every investigation that we've done. So the outcome will show clearly whether there are civil litigations, contracts that need to be cancelled, and the monies that need to be recovered, the disciplinary actions that have been referred to the accounting officers, also the referrals to NPA, and where there are other regulatory referrals will be doing that. Now, Honourable Chair, we'll go straight then to...
Before you proceed, Advocate Mutibi, I think on behalf of the committee, we will wish the member who is writing exams well.
Thank you.
I hope he or she has studied hard, and a good luck will just be a bonus. She must pass.
Yes.
We wish him or her all the luck.
No, thank you. Thank you. He's Mr. Leonard Lecheto, who usually leads the investigations and presentations. So we've really wished him well, and we'll send your well wishes on behalf of the Honourable Committee. Thank you. Ms. Gumbi, if you can go to slide number 7. Right, this is the Correctional Services one, Honourable Chair. This is the one on the Proclamation 18 of 2016. It focused on the investigations and the irregularities involving a company called Engineered System Solutions. This was dealing with the what was colloquially referred to as bracelets to monitor the parolees. I'm going to allow Mrs. Naomi Jose, hoping she is on the line. I spoke to her earlier. Ms. Jose, if you can proceed, please. Ms. Naomi Jose, are you on the platform?
I am on the platform. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Okay, I just wanted to introduce myself.
Sorry, through you, Chair. If you can, when you present, each one, please show your face when you present to the Honourable Committee. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Committee. As Advocate Mutibi indicated, I will be dealing with 3 of the DCS matters. Should I keep the camera on throughout, or should we just talk to the slides?
Not sure whether other members can see you. I can't see you.
I also can't see you
because of these big slides.
Oh, okay. Okay, no, let's proceed, Ms. Jose. Let's try and save time.
All right. If Ms. Gumbi can put us through to MS, to ESS. Ms. Gumbi?
Yes, ma'am. I am here. Please assist me with the page number.
If we can go to page 6.
Through you, Chair, and I'm really sorry about this. Can you go to just start off, and I hope it's the same page. Yes, it starts on page 7, and now start on page 8, which is the background, and go forward from there. Thank you. Ms. Jose, we can't hear you.
I'm waiting for Ms. Gumbi to fly to the slides.
Yes, we can see them. It's on slide on the background, slide number 8.
It's not on my side, sir. It's still on the SIU's legislative mandate.
Oh no, then there's a problem. Honourable Chair, with your permission, I will proceed because we don't want to waste the committee's time. It looks like my colleague has got connectivity problem. What slide are you on now?
I can still talk to the slide, sir.
Yes, please. Just indicate the page where you're on.
Okay. So in terms of ESS, this was, in terms of the background, this was what we call the, following a constitutional court judgment of the Fadzira Naifas, where inmates were sentenced to death before the 1st of March 1994, they became eligible for parole. DCS decided to pilot an electronic monitoring on 150 of the Fadzira Naifas. The former minister for DCS, Mrs. Mapisa Twakulo, initiated a pilot project for electronic monitoring in order to mitigate the risk associated with releasing these inmates. So the SIU was requested to investigate allegations of irregularity with regards to the award of the tender for the electronic monitoring system to a company called ESS. So initially, DCS put out a pilot project which would affect 150 prisoners. The procurement process with regards to engineered system solutions, which I will refer to as ESS, was alleged to have been irregular and in conflict with public government, public procurement, in particular Section 217 of the Constitution. So this project was initially awarded to ESS for 12 months. However, it was subsequently extended to 27 months without any SEM process. So as a result, the budget for the pilot project was initially 6.5 million and they ultimately paid 14 million, which equates to almost 125% more than was budgeted for, and 20% more than, as you know, Treasury only allows 20%. So during the execution of the pilot project, DCS decided to put out another tender for electronic monitoring in which they would monitor 10,000 prisoners. So 18 bid proposals were received. The tender was cancelled by the acting National Commissioner, Modise, at the time, supposedly because ESS did not meet the 70% functionality. However, when the SIU went through all the bids, we established that numerous bidders were actually found to be suitable, so the cancellation of the tender was irregular. It has been alleged that high-ranking officials in DCS were bribed to ensure the award of the tender to ESS. An instruction was then given to re-advertise, and the members of the BEC were changed. So what happens now is that the specs were actually tailored to suit ESS and to ensure that the other bidders disqualified. We received, DCS received 18 proposals again. The tender was adjudicated upon, and this time ESS met the minimal threshold for functionality. A big problem here was that the services that ESS was providing related to security, and ESS is not registered with PCRA. The tender was awarded to ESS. This was a five-year contract to monitor 1,000 parolees. Initially, they anticipated 10,000, but due to the costs involved, it was later limited to 1,000 with a contract value of 1.2 million. So in terms of the focus area, Chair, we looked at the pilot project, the cancelled project, the project that was awarded. We looked at whether DC had received value for money and whether there was possible corruption. So just to quickly go through our findings, we found that there was non-compliance with CETA. As you know, if you're dealing with information technology, you should make use of CETA to procure this on behalf of the department. There was also non-compliance with regards to PCRA because the equipment used, being the bracelets, were actually defined as security equipment, and the services provided by ESS constitutes security services. So it was established by the SIU that neither ESS or its subcontractors were registered with PCRA and as such were not PCRA compliant. There was non-compliance, and we also say fraud because in the bid documents, ESS indicates that ESS and all its subcontractors are in fact PCRA compliant. There was also non-compliance or fraud with regards to the State Security Agency. One of the requirements for the bid was that ESS and all its subcontractors had to be the level of confidential, because obviously you're dealing with confidential information regarding the parolees and DCS, and this is information which we obviously don't want to make public. There was also BEE fraud with regards to the use of ICASA as a subcontractor, which actually constituted fronting. We had met with the owner, the CEO of ICASI, and he had indicated that he had not signed the bid documents, he had not authorized anyone in his company to sign it, and in fact he had received no compensation from ESS and had not actually participated in this contract. So it was fraudulent for ESS to make this representation in their bid documents, because basically by representing that they were using 100% BEE company, ESS's bid proposal would have scored higher in terms of BEE. So given that this was not the case and they did not make use of ICASI, they committed fraud and made a material representation to DCS. Which actually, so the non-compliance in the terms of CETA, PCRA, SSA, and BE gave DCS the right to have the contract set aside. We also found that they were disqualified in terms of the actual screening process because of non-compliance with what we've mentioned, plus that they did not comply with Section 217 of the Constitution. As we know, Section 2 of the Constitution states that any conduct inconsistent with the Constitution is invalid. With regards to the outcomes, sir, we referred a letter on the 16th of August 2018 to the chairperson of PCRA and advised of the misconduct. So this was in respect of ESS and its directors, 3M South Africa and its directors, as well as 14 employees or signees of ESS. We have tried to find out what action PCRA has taken, but unfortunately to date that hasn't been reported to us. With regards to disciplinaries, May 2017, we had served a referral on the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services to warrant the institution of disciplinary proceedings against Mr. Modise, who was the former National Commissioner. However, Mr. Modise retired in August that year before disciplinary action could be taken against him. We had also referred disciplinary matters to the National Commissioner against two DCS officials who were members of the BEC in the pilot project. because they failed to comply with their responsibilities as set out on the PFMA. They failed to check and verify PCRA and SSA security clearance. DCS has advised us that one official has retired and the department decided not to institute action against the admin official. Further disciplinaries were recommended against five DCS officials for gross and misconduct with regards to the final tender, because once again they failed to comply with the responsibilities as set out in the PFMA. They failed to check and verify PCRA and SSA. DCS has advised that one official died, two resigned, and the remaining two are actually challenging the disciplinary. With regards to the criminal matters, in 2018, we made 18 criminal referrals to the NPA with regards to ESS, 3M, Connect, and 14 employees of ESS. So we've also registered in July 2021, we registered the matter with the ACTT. In July this year, the ACT advised that a prosecutor had been allocated to this matter and they had requested the SAPs to follow up with some further investigations. Some of the documents were lost by the ACTT, and in August this year, the SIU assisted by providing them with the documents and affidavits which were misplaced. So basically what's happening now is that the AFU is waiting for the NPA to formulate charges before it becomes involved in this matter. During the course of the investigation, when we identified all the various non-compliances, we recommended to DCS that they cancel the contract with ESS, and which DCS duly did. And as a result of the early cancellation, the investigation prevented the department from suffering a loss of 221 million. The investigation is finalized and the final presidential report was submitted to the presidency on the 17th November, 2019. We had also made a submission that the DCS National Commissioner proceed with blacklisting against ESS, so to restrict them from doing business with the public sector. So what we'd recommended was to embark on a fair administrative process so that the entities and the persons associated with the ESS be added to the department's database of restricted suppliers and Treasury central databases of suppliers prohibited from doing business in the public sector. DCS has advised that they did forward this recommendation, and its CFO is still awaiting Treasury's advices with regards to ESS and several other contracts which it had requested to be blacklisted. With regards to the civil matter, is Mr. Walzer in this meeting?
Yes, he is.
Okay. If Mr. Walzer can perhaps just deal with the civil outcome.
Okay. Apologies, Chair, through you. Mr. Walzer, are you able to proceed on the civil side? Or Dr. Wells, please. Let's save time. Okay, Chair, through you, I'm going to proceed just to save time. As we indicated, Chair, that part of the outcomes are to also proceed with the civil litigation. So as the Honorable Committee would have heard with the previous slides, that it is very clear that the allegations of irregularities were substantiated and we found that the contract was awarded irregularly. So we were then legally enjoined, duty bound, to cancel the contract. Now, during the financial year of April 2016, we referred evidence then for the civil proceedings. The contract value is 365 million in respect of the final project, right? And now on the 28th, March 2018, we were the SIU, the first applicant, and the National Commissioner, the second applicant. We instituted a review in the High Court. And this is the time, honorable members, where we had not established the special tribunal as yet. We instituted the proceedings in the Gauteng division. We've got a case number there, 21912/2018, in which SIU and DCS sought an order that the court review and set aside the contract awarded to DCS in respect of the pilot project to ESS and the resulting service level agreement and the tender in respect of final project to the ESS. Please go to the next slide. Right. We also prayed to the court to make an order that is just and equitable in the circumstances where the service level agreement in respect of the pilot project and the final project are set aside. So the matter was heard, honorable members, between the 7th and the 10th of May, and the judgment was reserved and subsequently delivered on the 18th of December, 2019 already. Now, hopefully Dr. Wells could probably be on the platform and listening. If there's a question really specifically around the condonation. Honorable Chair and members would be aware that with respect of proceedings of this nature, the courts get to adhere strictly to the timelines. There was a condonation that was applied in this regard by the Special Investigating Unit because it dealt with the whether this was done in terms of administrative act, a promotion of Administrative Justice Act or not, in which case there were specific timelines that were applicable. And our application for condonation was dismissed. And there's a rationale. I really engaged with the team in terms of this issue. There was a rationale around the application for the condonation. And we then sought to appeal against the dismissal. We were granted leave to appeal to the Supreme Court. And if you go to the next slide. Now, the matter was heard by the Supreme Court, which held as follows. The decision to award the pilot tender and the conclusion of the related contract took place some years before the review application was brought. Whilst the decision to award the final tender and conclusion of the SLA was approximately 4 years before the review was launched. Now, it appears from this that the FCA was unpersuaded that the services provided by ESS are covered by the provisions of CETA and that there appears to have been no misrepresentation in respect of CERA compliance at the time of bidding by ESS. Or that, as per the BEE, it held that no proof of fraudulent misrepresentation, despite the evidence that we believe we put forward, as Ms. Jose mentioned, that the ECASI subcontractor, whom they depended on, never, ever authorized ESS to bid on their behalf. But be that as it may, we respected the outcome of the Supreme Court of Appeal. So the appeal indicated that we failed to show non-compliance with statutory prescripts and the tender specifications or misrepresentation on three challenges. Even if non-compliance were to be a remedy shown in some instances, the degree is not so egregious. I mean, that's what the court is saying, as to invalidate the procurement process, assessed in terms of the appellant's prospects of success. Now, as we are saying, we respect the outcome, and we went really to our drawing board, so to speak, in terms of assessing the judgment and what is it that we could have learned from this. And the legal team did exactly that. So at that stage, we also engaged with DCS and said we will not be taking further action in this regard. And of course, we also indicated to DCS that on an operation side, just so that the business can continue, because the as far as we were concerned and the contract was cancelled, DCS could proceed and get another service provider, so to speak. And we are informed that on the business side, that part is ongoing. Can you go to the next slide, please? Right. We include the what we call systemic recommendations in terms of what we believe could be improved, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. And we'll really not go into much detail because we will be engaging further on with DCS in terms of this systemic recommendation. In this case, and I know that my colleague, Ms. Jose, really wanted to go through this. Ms. Jose, are you ready to take over?
I am, sir.
Okay, you can proceed.
With regards to the systemic recommendations, as a result of the non-compliance, our recommendations were based on that. The fact that they embarked on three different processes, being the pilot project, the cancelled tender, as well as the final tender, we, without making use of the services of CETA. So we have advised them that in future, when they need anything that's related to information technology, they need to liaise with CETA in this regard. DCS has advised that they are doing so. Also, with regards to the PCRA requirements, the fact that, you know, if you're looking at something like electronic monitoring, you're looking at security equipment and security services. So they have to ensure that they PCR compliant. In this instance, it appears that they didn't vet the service providers and they didn't vet the subcontractors. So DCIS have indicated that in future they will be more cautious and ensure that the correct individuals and the subcontractors are vetted and found to be PCR compliant. Also, with regards to the SSA, whatever level of security is needed, be it top secret, be it confidential, they will ensure that they liaise with the SSA to that the service providers have the correct level of security clearance going forward. Further, with regards to the fact that they didn't comply with Section 217, they have indicated that they will advise their SCM department in particular to be more cautious and to ensure that the SCM, the correct SCM process is followed. So once we'd completed this investigation, Chair, we made certain observations. And one of that is that they didn't constitute a BSC properly. And that's how they were able to actually tailor the specs to suit ESS. So this is something that they need to do in future, compile a BSS and provide them with specific delegations. Also, the failure to make use of a CETA when dealing with IC-related matters also led to non-compliance and led to a company like ESS being appointed. There was also lack of contract management, which resulted in, for example, the pilot project being extended. If you look at it, it was initially for 12 months, and then it went on to 27 months. There should have been some sort of competitive bidding process if they wanted to extend it for such a period, and especially given the costs involved, which were like 125% more than what was originally budgeted for. Obviously, they also, we were looking at the non-compliance with the Triple PFA Act, as well as the fact that they need to be really careful before exceeding the threshold. Treasury allows 20%, and they need to actually get written permission from Treasury prior to deviating from the stipulated price. And this is something we find not only in DCS, but in various other departments as well. And then, of course, the lack of vetting of the subcontractors. It seems as though while they look at the bids, they take everything at face value. So if the individual, like in this case, indicated that they were PCRA compliant, they were subcontracting with a BEE company, they had the correct security clearance, it was just accepted based on the tender documents. Nobody actually went and checked to confirm whether it was true. And that is something that GCS have indicated that they are now doing. Okay. Also, with regards to the cancelled tender, that in effect amounted to irregular expenditure because there were actually individuals who, or service providers who met the criteria and who could have been appointed. So there wasn't a need for a third tender. There's also the fact that there was insufficient monitoring by the allocated project managers, because they would have seen that, you know, the for example, the electronic monitoring bracelets weren't always functioning, and this was only picked up, you know, at a very late stage. And there's also a lack of consequence management in terms of basically against the officials, you know. Sometimes it's just not sufficient to give someone a written warning when they failed to comply with the PFMA. What they did resulted in fruitless and wasteful expenditure to the department, and you're also giving them an opportunity to resign before they're charged, so to speak. We also discovered there was really, we couldn't get all the tender documents, and that's because there was a lack of proper archiving. And basically, in this instance, the DCS didn't get value for money. So, so if we come down to the last column, being the summary of outcomes, the SIU prevented the rand value of loss was 221 million. We made one administrative referral, which was the blacklisting, and that is being considered by Treasury. There were 18 criminal referrals. That is with the NPA and it's still ongoing. With the five investigations were closed. That is the five focus areas. Advocate Machibi did explain what happened with the civil matter, which was to a value of 365, and we have submitted one report to the presidency. Chair, is there any questions you have on this particular investigation before I go on to the next?
I think we would, at this time, I mean, I think quickly, if we can ask the National Commissioner to make a brief remarks as to how they responded to your observations and recommendations.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, and also greetings to colleagues from the SIU. Honorable Chairperson, we made submissions to the SIU with regards to written submissions with regards to how we are implementing the recommendations. We also work with the colleagues from the SIU in ensuring that as we implement the recommendations, we are not off the mark. To be specific, I would request Honorable Chairperson that we give the appointed colleague that is working on a daily basis with the SIU, Mr. Killian, to make specific technical remarks on the work that we have been doing in implementing recommendations and also cooperating with the SIU. Through your permission, Honorable Chairperson.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, thank you, National Commissioner. As the National Commissioner said, we are interacting basically on a weekly basis with the SIU, in this case more directly with the project managers today. If I can maybe just go to some of the issues. In terms of the... disciplinary issues, maybe let me just stand still for a moment with the outcome of the Supreme Court of Appeal, which did make it a little bit more difficult for us to deal with the disciplinary issues, because the Supreme Court of Appeal said that the, in terms of their findings, it was not so that the contracts are not invalid, which means the contracts are then there and they continue. And in that regard, we had to discuss the outcome of the Supreme Court of Appeal with the SIU, and we've had several meetings in this current year with them, later with the legal officials from the SIU to discuss the impact of the FTA on the report and the findings in terms of disciplinary. And the agreement was that, in fact, yes, that has an impact on the disciplinary findings. So DCS is now in the process to finalize our internal report, which we'll be submitting shortly to the National Commission in terms of what we recommend. There was, on the final project, there was recommendations against a number of officials, although we've indicated that one of them actually, this is the right page, one of those officials actually died 2 or 3 years ago. Two resigned before we actually received the report and went on pension. And then we have two officials who are still in the employment of the department. And on those two officials, we will be making a report to the National Commission, and we will in due course provide feedback to the SIU on those issues. On the criminal, I cannot comment on that because the SIU is behaving, and we are behaving with other on that. We will support wherever we can. In terms of the systemic recommendations, the blacklisting, I can just confirm what Mr. Say indicated to the Honorable Committee. In terms of the civil outcome, I mean, that's an aspect there. There's nothing that I can add. In terms of the systemic recommendations, definitely the department has taken that on board, and we've had meetings with the acting CFO currently. I know, and I don't have all the details of that, there has been changes in our procurement, in how they deal with it, especially when it comes to speaker issues where we need to engage them. So we have taken on board what the SIU recommended so that we don't get wanted again in future on these specific issues. The issue of the vetting, it's a serious issue, and the department will be looking into that very seriously in future to vet prospective providers, especially on issues like where it relates to our security, like this matter was. In terms of delegations, we have looked into that. There is delegations, and we need to maybe review them again to make sure that we are totally compliant on what the SIU recommended to. That's a comment on the issue of lack of consequences. It is true that, and as you say on slide 39, that officials often resign or before attending investigations, which render any disciplinary action against them. Department site is very big, and we are committed to that. That we will, where there's sufficient evidence, and we will take the necessary action, and especially with the commissioner and the former commissioner, we've been trying to do that consistently, and we will be doing so in future, we can give that commitment. I think I will leave it there, Chairperson. That was that brief comment. Thank you, National Commissioner. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Can I now give this opportunity to members who would want to make questions, ask questions, or make comments? Honorable Nivot Pohan, Honorable Everbert, Honorable Stevensart, Honorable Horn, Honorable Klinis Breitenbach, in that order.
Good morning, Chair. If the host could spotlight Honourable Neo Druffin, please. I would like to say thank you to the presentation from the SIU, and thank you to all the colleagues who presented. Chair, my interpreter said there's a lot of background noise with the DCS when the person was speaking. So if there was, if there's any possibility that they could adjust that, and that would make it easier for the interpreters to hear. And then just a few points of clarity. The monitoring, the electronic monitoring devices, the bracelets, so they are now not in existence because of this matter. So they are not being used at all. Because at first it was the pilot of 150, and then it was then the project of 10,000, then 1,000. So I just like to confirm, are the monitoring bracelets actually still being used or not in TCS? And in previous presentations, we've heard that the SIU has not been receiving payments. So in terms of this specific proclamation, was the SIU compensated? And then recommendations by the SIU to the DCS, does the department have the capacity to implement these recommendations? And then in terms of the two officials who are still in the employment of the department, are they working in the same capacity as they were during this, you know, time of this contract, during time of the investigation? And then in terms of CETA, in relation to any ICT related equipment or goods and services, CETA needs to be involved. But I would like to know then, has CETA never been involved, you know, in any of the department's, you know, procurement? Is that the reason why then CETA was not even involved in this particular tender? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable.
Sorry, can the host unpin? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Engelbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to thank the SIU for the report. Firstly, in the findings, it becomes very clear that there's very serious shortcomings that exist in the procurement and the bid adjudication practice in the Department of Correctional Services. Now, this is important for the committee because I think this indicates a problem in the entire correctional services processes, not only in these cases, investigated, because in these cases, in the findings of all the other cases that we did not even discuss yet, there's certain things that comes up every time that's a strong indication of problems that exist. And I think that obviously not for the SIU, but this is important for the committee, because I do believe that this needs attention and rather urgent. Now, the question I have relating to this investigation is that...
Your voice is too low.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Thank you. Yes. There seems that there's a, for a lack of a better word, repeat offenders, if we can call it like that, where names comes up on a regular basis when in these investigations, and not only these but previous ones as well. For instance, the previous Commissioner Modise, and there's I'm sure there's others, but I would like to know from the SIU, did they come across certain individuals that feature repeatedly in the investigations when it comes to the issues that they investigated, and I'm rather concerned that before disciplinary action can be taken, people have a tendency to resign, and but surely there must be other steps that can be instituted against such individuals as well, because this cannot just be left and say, well, they resigned now. Unfortunately, there's nothing that we can do about this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Engelberg. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. I also appreciate the presentation, incredible hard work that has been done. I also appreciate that the contract was cancelled, saving 221 million. I think that is always a highlight for me. And I really look forward. We know now with the tribunal that one will be able to get those contracts cancelled much quicker. I think obviously the setback was the SCA judgment, and that happens with litigation. One isn't always successful, and I'm pleased that that the SIU did have a think tank and to understand what was lacking in the SCA judgment, what steps can be taken to improve litigation going forward. So I'm sure lessons were learnt in that regard. However, obviously there are implications of the loss of that SCA judgment as the official. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, we can hear you. We can hear you.
The official indicated that it has an impact on the disciplinary action, and it will probably have an impact possibly on the criminal cases. But bear in mind, yeah, you've got a civil matter, and the test in civil matters is on a balance of probabilities, whilst in a criminal case, as we know, it's a much higher a test beyond reasonable doubt. So I think there will be impact from that. But again, lessons are learned. What I would like to know, and maybe the information might not be readily available, we can maybe get it in writing, is obviously there are costs involved. The SCA judgment, you would have to pay your own costs, and of course the costs of the other side, which could run into a million or two, I presume. Maybe you could give us that information. And then lastly, just on the issue of the blacklisting, I understand the application to National Treasury was on the 17th of June 2020, and it has been a matter of concern that has been raised in Parliament that very few companies are being blacklisted by National Treasury. Now, I understand that is beyond your control, but maybe can we get an update? From what I gather, there was no definitive decision on that issue by National Treasury as far as you are aware. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, in line with what other colleagues have already raised, I want to ask a few questions. First is, in addition to what the Honourable Nivo Dragan has raised regarding the continued use of electronic monitoring, and previously we were informed that another aspect of that contract was that unfortunately, it was crafted set up in such a way that only the original company ultimately would be in a position to service or supply replacement parts for the electronic monitoring devices. So if we could be informed as to what is the possibility ultimately of continued use of these devices on the one hand, but then secondly and more importantly, knowing what we know regarding the budgetary context within which the department operates, as well as the ratio between the officials at the community corrections division versus the amount of parolees which must be monitored, one has the sense, and prior to the National Commission and now on a permanent basis taking office, we were informed by DCS at some stage that they have clarity of mind that electronic monitoring going forward would be part of the solution. So I would also want to maybe get some comments as to, on the one hand, based on what has been learned from this exercise, what is then the way forward regarding electronic monitoring. But then secondly, Chair, it is of course good to hear that the National Commissioner says that they have reported in writing to the SIU as to what steps are being taken to prevent a repeat of this going forward. But I am with the Honourable Engelbrecht in saying that we as a committee must be interested in more detail. So I would want to suggest, Chair, that if that information is not available today, that in that follow-up meeting, which you have referred to in your introductory remarks, we as a committee must insist that we must be briefed in full on the steps that would prevent in future that type of bit adjudication and bit specification processes that were, if I understand the report of the SIU this morning correctly, ultimately set up in totality to only allow for one provider to qualify to render the services. This is of course not a unique situation. It is something that is prevalent throughout the public procurement processes of our country, and therefore for us to play a meaningful role as an oversight body, I do believe we must now insist in being briefed and being able to interrogate the specific steps that would be taken and the specific mechanisms that would be put in place by DCS to prevent a reoccurrence of exactly that type of situation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Horn. Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good morning to everybody. I'm largely covered by my colleagues. However, there's one matter that remains a concern, and that is the first presentation by Ms. Josie. She mentioned that they referred a matter to the ACTT, whereupon documents were lost. They were fortunately in a position to replace those documents. But we're dealing here with a kind of matter where it's convenient for documents to get lost. Because that loss of documents could quite simply derail any criminal investigation or prosecution. So A, I'd like to know if that is possibly the case, and if so, is it being investigated? And this is a question we'll have to ask the ACTT as well. How is it that a body, a high-profile body, filled with high-level individuals like the ACTT, can lose documents that are pertinent to a matter of this nature that is so important? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Jens Breitenbach. Honourable Masako Chaila.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apology, I could not raise my hand in time because I'm using a new gadget. So I'm still learning. Thank you, Chair. and good morning to the colleagues. Yes, Chairperson, I think many issues have been already covered, but I'll just make a follow-up on one or two. I think the first one that I wanted to also to, I don't know if that follow-up meeting that you proposed, I really support it, but I think also that follow-up meeting, it should include all our institutions, like the NPA also must also be there, so that when we revisit these presentations, they also respond. Because I was going to be interested in the referrals that Mr. Advocate Mutibi is talking about, to hear what is the NPA going to say on this, on that matter, because these are the matter, old matters, which the NPA must also prioritize. There must be dedicated teams that are working on these old, the backlog checks, so that they find expression. That is my first comment there. And also on the issue of blacklisted, this issue, I think, I'm going to propose that it be find expression also on that meeting that we spoke, we proposed of the DGs, of the DGs, where we're going to meet also with Treasury and all that. Because if this company, Chair, is still doing business with government, how much damage are they doing? Because if you listen here, it seems as if this company was deliberately having a relationship with the inside people in doing this corruption. It tells you that these things are not, they are not, they were not done by chance. It's like there was a web, people were working, some they were ignoring to take decisions. Some they were turning a blind eye, as if maybe they don't see what is happening. So I think it is a matter that we need to we make a follow up also, and the department is also really briefing us as you indicated and our colleagues, Chair. And then on the issue, Chair, I wanted to find out on the issue of those who retired and Ntate Modise, or is it Mme Modise, those, some of them, there are two who are retired according to the report, if I'm not mistaken. And there are those who resigned, if maybe I had it properly. There are those who resigned. And there are those who are still in the department. The one that Honorable Velma was talking about, the two, those two. I imagine as we are talking now, as they are listening, and they are challenging the outcome, if I'm not mistaken, I heard that they are challenging that. And they are, Chairperson, how can they assist us if they are challenging this? Maybe they might be having some information that we don't know that they can also give us in order to resolve these matters. Chairperson, I'm not sure how can we use that tool that is within the department, because there's no way that they don't know what was happening in the department, and they were involved, as the investigation indicates. You see, so I think something must be done also to them, because they were part of this part of this scheme, if I may say without a lack of a better way. So I want to find out to Advocate Mutibi as to, from their side, those who are retired, what was the recommendation from their side? Because if I'm not mistaken, recently we were talking about issues, because they are done, their pensions, maybe they have received them now. But are we saying, Chair, because we're still going to experience this in future, are we saying we leave those people because they're already gone? Is there anything that is going to happen to them to bring them to account for this, so that we give... there's a lesson even to those who are still inside
that if you do something wrong, we can still pursue you, even if you're outside. I'm not sure what is the law saying around that. If maybe he can comment on that one, Chair, and also the department also itself to help us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masoko Chele. Advocate Mkhize.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll start off with Honorable Nivot Drachen. The question was, has SIU been paid? And we're really pleased that the Department of Correctional Services has been honoring the invoices. And we really believe that if other institutions were to do the same, our work would really be enhanced. And thanks to the National Commissioner. And the other question, does the DCS have the capacity? I'm sure the National Commissioner can speak on that. See, two employees that are still with DCS, National Commissioner can probably speak on that. The reason why CETA was not involved, these are our findings, that because of the nature of what was procured, because of the electronic nature, and government as a whole requires that when departments procure electronic systems, CETA as the, call it the custodian of electronic systems for government, has to be consulted, and it wasn't consulted in this regard. And we believe on merit that the department erred in that regard. The issue around the Honorable Engelbrecht, the repeat offenders, yes, indeed. I mean, you'll probably see even in the next presentation around MSW, that there are some officials that are really mentioned again, with particular reference to the former commissioner, and we mentioned this because we've I think gone public with him before at the committee, and the others is because really their proceedings were not as public as yet, and we didn't mention their names. But where there are repeat officials or repeat offenders, we do indicate, and the department, of course, deals with that accordingly. I need to mention, and these are some of the questions that come up, that with regard to the officials who retire or resign before actions are taken, as we have always said, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that we ensure that resignation or call it early retirement or retirement should not absolve the officials from the criminal process or the civil litigation process. So in this regard, part of the 18 referrals to NPA for criminal prosecution or investigation does involve some of those officials. So we are expecting that they should be held to account on the criminal law side. Honorable Swart, thank you for the questions. Indeed, we took the SCA judgment very seriously, and I've already asked Dr. Wells to be on standby to really just speak around some of those technical findings. But we were also not happy, and that is why we went back, and as you can see, this dates back to even before the special tribunal. We've learned our lesson, and all of the cases that we take either to the high court or the special tribunal, we haven't lost any on similar grounds. So Honorable Chair, we believe that we have ensured that we put in place measures to avoid such kind of setbacks, because it really doesn't augur well. But on the merits itself, we believe that, I mean, the cancellation of the contract itself which saved the department about 221 million. And this is just our view, that we advised the department to cancel on the same basis, you know, that we wanted to cancel the overall contract and recover. So it's really anomalous that, or it's an irony that, you know, the ESF did not even challenge the cancellation of the contract, because we really believe that on the merits, I think we were really standing on safe grounds. And some of the referrals that we have made are based on the misrepresentations and the fraud that we have picked up. And we are really of the view, we believe that on the criminal side, I think the merits are solid, the evidence is solid. We believe that we working with NPA, we should be able to prove fraud and corruption. With regards to the costs, Dr. Wells, if you can come in, if we do not have the exact cost, we can come back to the committee in writing, and we should, just indicating the cost, who were the cost ordered against who, and then indicate to the committee in writing. Unless you are able to make an indication now, Honorable Chair, we will still ensure that we respond in writing on the cost order. Dr. Wells, are you able to come in now before I proceed?
Yes. Yes, Advocate Muntivi. On the cost aspect, the cost has not been quantified as yet, but the cost order is against both applicants, that is the SIU first applicant as well as the DCS as the second applicant. Then just relating to the two issues that you addressed, Advocate Muntivi, maybe I should just add the following concerning the questions raised by the Honourable Member, Mr. Swartz. If we refer to slide 32, significantly the first two bullets addresses the lessons learned concerning the outcome of this ESS matter. But more importantly, the last issue that I just want to briefly address is the import and implications of this judgment. And I want to refer the honorable members to slide 31, and that is the first bullet. The court made this ruling in the context, if we read the second sentence of the first bullet, the court said, even if we do prove, so the court is not discounting that there might be non-compliance. It only made a ruling in the context of whether it should review and set aside the contract or not. So my view is that that the ruling only applies to the court stating that the misrepresentations that we alluded to or the non-compliance that we might refer to does not justify the setting aside of the contract. So in all other aspects, it's a value judgment that I submit. It's pertaining to the setting aside of the contract and should not, if either any other findings are available or evidence, it should not have a material effect on any of those remedies or consequence management actions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wells. But be that as it is, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Swart, we've learned lessons and would like to ensure that costs of this nature do not come as a result of technicalities, non-compliance with timelines, and the instruction is very clear to the legal team that we cannot afford to not comply with legal timeframes when it comes to civil proceedings, because it's not in the interest of the public, and of course the committee would not view that favorably. We assure you, Honorable Chair, that we've put in place the measures to avoid that. Honorable Horn, I think most of the questions relate to the department. Honorable Chair, I'll leave that to the National Commissioner around continued use of devices, ratios of officials to parolees, and so on. Honorable Breitenbach, and thank you so much for that question. It also concerned us that matters that were referred to ACTT, you could find that document processing or safety of documents results in documents being misplaced or lost. I want to assure the Honorable Committee we have since taken it up, and we are part of the ACTT as well. So we have done a proper review of the ACTT process, including case prioritization, case processing, and so on. And document safety is really a critical part of that. Fortunately, we were able to reproduce the document, and the prejudice is really not that much, where the cases are being processed on the criminal side, and we will still drive towards criminal consequence management. But we do take that point. We will again make sure that ACTT really continues to improve in terms of its document management. Honorable Maseko Chele, I really agree that with the follow-up sessions, and I know that Chair will pronounce on that, has already pronounced actually, that if our colleagues are also in the meeting, NPA, they will be able to respond timely. The issue of blacklisting, we also really take it as serious, because when we find that service providers have not, you know, acted prudently in departments when they do business with government, they need to be blacklisted. There is no option about that. And we are glad that the department actioned this part. We are waiting for, you know, the response from the National Treasury. We believe that that should happen, of course, based on the administrative process that needs to be followed. Right, the issue around the two officials who are still there, that they could probably assist. I'm sure the National Commissioner could probably comment on that, but of course they are there, they're in the department. If they challenge in the disciplinary process, we'll probably be guided by where they are challenging it at, whether it's the CCMA or the Labour Court, and we will await the outcome. Honourable Chair, I believe I've covered most of the questions. Oh, in terms of payment, I think I did say that I checked specifically with our CFO. The DCS has been paying. In fact, the last payment came in August, and we are really pleased that the payments have been made. Thank you.
Thank you, Advocate Mkhize. National Commissioner. Honorable Nibo Trofan, is that a new question?
Yes, Chair, it is a new hand, if I may, and just after the response of the advocate, I wanted to ask the question, when the presenter said the National Treasury has not responded, I see in the report, which has already been given to the presidency in 2019, but the SIU is still waiting for a response from National Treasury. So I would have expected that the blacklisting would have been immediately responded to. So I'm a little bit concerned why the SIU is still waiting. Maybe the committee can assist to follow up with Treasury to fast track the blacklisting, because while they're waiting, they can also, you know, apply to other bids and tenders and for funding. So I just wanted to check on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think it's something that we will respond to. Mr. Tabakhale, National Commissioner.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On the issue of the monitoring bracelet, in line with the outcomes of the investigations and the legal processes, as the department, we then, as part of the broader information technology programs that we are developing and designing, we signed an MOU with the CSIR. One of the projects is the electronic monitoring bracelet, which we are developing and designing together with the CSIR. Of course, the department would own the patent and the designs, also the rollout. The project is still at the design stage. With regards to how we are working with CETA, all our IT projects are now going through CETA in line with the CETA legislation. And on the issue of the importance of the monitoring system, yes, in line with the question and the comments by Honorable Swartz, that's exactly the reason why we started this project with the CSIR, is to ensure that we increase our capacity or strengthen our capacity, because the members that we have on the ground will or are not equal to the task with regards to the ratio as compared to the number of parolees that have to be monitored. I think, Honorable Chairperson, in brief, those are the responses that one can provide, but also indicate that in the specific meeting, that follow-up meeting, we will ensure that we have all the details. In fact, the presentation that we will make there will go into detail with regards to how we are treating the outcomes of the investigations by the SIU. In the meeting, currently, Honorable Chairperson, we have the acting CFO. We also have colleagues from JITO. And also to indicate that today we welcome the new Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for IT. So at least at that level of management, we have an executive that started working from today. And we hope that this will add to the improvements that we want to continue making in how we manage the ICT space in the department. Let me stop there, Honorable Chairperson, in brief, but the colleagues are in the meeting. If there are specifics, I will request that they then be allowed to add. But I thought this response that one has given summarily addresses the issues that were raised by Honorable Members. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. The new executive, the new Deputy National Commissioner for JITO, can you see him or her?
It is Mr. Maponya. I am sure that he will activate the video. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Maponya.
Good day, Honorable Chair. This is PDC JITO, Mr. Maponya, on my left side.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Maponya. You're welcome. We hope to work very well with yourself and the entire team. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Ms. Josa? Ms. Noemi Josa?
Yes, Chair. With regards to the question from Honourable Engelbrecht, with regards to what measures can be taken when individuals resign, what we do is if they resign and go into the private sector, we can't do anything about it. However, if they resign and they go into the public sector, we can actually refer it to their new employer. One thing to bring to your attention is that all disciplinary isn't necessarily criminal or civil. So in certain instances, once they resign, we can't take action, but often they because they were perhaps negligent in following policy, but in a lot of instances where their actions are criminal, that is referred to the NPA. I hope that answers Honourable Engelbrecht's concerns.
But he was not asking something that is of a general application. He was asking with regard to the specific individuals.
With these specific individuals, none of them went into the private, into government again.
National Commissioner, thank you. National Commissioner, your hand is up.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I forgot to address myself to that. Those that are still in the department who are continuing to pursue these processes, of course, they will be challenged, but we will continue to pursue that. Those that have resigned, as the SIU indicated, the referrals were then submitted with the NPA and the Hawks. We are cooperating with both. They have been coming into the department to request specific information, and we are providing all the information that is required. So we are actually also awaiting the outcomes of those processes. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Can we have a 5-minute break and come back at 11:07? Comfort break.
Thank you, Chair.
The next one also, Honorable Chair, am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Thank you. Yeah, the next one is also one of those investigations that have been finalized at the DCS. I think it's not going to take long.
Okay.
Thanks. And again, Ms. Naomi Jose is going to present that. Naomi, over to you. Ms. Jose, please unmute wherever you are.
Maybe you should proceed.
I'm going to proceed, sir. Honorable Chair. This again, as you can see, is really quite an old proclamation. It was published in 2016. We'll proceed. Go to the next slide, please. Honorable Chair, again, here.
April, the former commissioner, Mr. Medise, had referred this matter to the SIU. Basically, he wanted an investigation in respect of two contracts. One related to the design and project management in respect of 5 prisons. The other related to Guillaume assessments relating to 221 correctional facilities. And now it was alleged that Maset Loko Scott Wilson, I'll refer to them as MSW, that they were irregularly appointed in respect of both the renovation and the Guillaume conditional assessments. So the appointments were found to have been contrary to the SCM process relating to the public sector procurement. What happened here is they utilized a contract which between the Department of Higher Education and MSW Consortium, which comprised 10 companies, and DCS received permission to participate in this contract. It was also alleged that MSW may have had a corrupt relationship with one or more DCS officials. It was alleged that the services rendered by MSW were substandard, and in certain cases, these services weren't rendered at all. The amounts paid to DCS, to MSW by DCS, were also not in line with the services rendered by MSW, or and the announcement market related. So in other words, DCS didn't receive value for money. So in our findings, it was established that the higher education had given DCS permission to participate in the higher education's SLA for the purposes of both the renovation and for the purpose of the renovation. DCS had been historically underspending in respect of their facilities program. And as you can see, the final environments varied from 69% to 95%. So in this particular financial year, DCS had to return 812 million of funds to Treasury, which they didn't want to do. As a result, they established a task team to see how they could use the money so they didn't have to return it to Treasury. So by doing that, they found a way in terms of Treasury Regulation 16.6, in terms of which they piggybacked on the Higher Education SLA and appointed MSW without following a competitive bidding process. So both the renovation and the GIAMA assessments actually exceeded the duration and cost implications associated with the higher education SLA. As you're aware, in order to participate in a 16A, the duration and the cost must be the same. DCS basically relied on the provisions of 16A when they requested permission to participate in the higher education contract. And so the appointments were actually in contravention of the SEM processes. We found that MSW had colluded with one or more DCS officials. With regards to the renovations to the prisons, it was established that the services rendered were substandard, and in certain cases, they weren't rendered at all. The SIU had appointed expert engineers and architects to look at the five prison, and in all instances, it was found that MSW had overcharged DCS by about 20 million, and in none of the instances were any renovations done. In fact, in two instances, no renovations were done. So DCS didn't even get value for money there. On the 19th of June 2014, MSW approached DCS and they offered to conduct GIAMA conditional assessments in respect of 221 correctional facilities at a cost of 1.8 million. I should add that initially MSW quoted 4.2 million per facility, and then they brought that down. So DCS paid MSW 56 million for 55 conditional assessments. So this actually, the fact that MSW came to DCS with this proposal, it amounts to an unsolicited proposal, and DCS shouldn't even have considered MSW to conduct these assessments. And this was particularly unwarranted because at the time there was an SLA between IDT, which is a subsidiary of DPW, in terms of which the IDT would perform GIAMA conditional assessments at a much, much lower rate. The SIU also appointed experts to look at the GIAMA assessments, which had been done by MSW. And the experts basically advised us that these assessments weren't even worth the paper they were written on. They weren't GIAMA compliant, and as such, DCS couldn't rely on them. So we also followed up with DCS, who advised that they had not utilized the 55 GIAMA assessments. And so this actually constitutes fruitless and wasteful expenditure to the value of 56 million. With regards to outcomes, once again, we submitted a disciplinary referral against the then commissioner, Mr. Medise. As advised, he retired from DCS in August. There was a disciplinary referral against Emma Trumaker, who was the acting CFO at the time. Her hearing is still ongoing. It was actually set for the 7th October, and DCS is awaiting a new date, partly because she keeps changing attorneys, or rather doesn't pay her, she resigns and then, you know, reappoints them. So that's what's delaying that process. There was a disciplinary process against Ms. Katinga, who was the Director of Professional Services. Her matter is finalized and she was given a written warning. There was, prior to the proclamation being issued, DCS had actually initiated disciplinary proceedings against Mr. Ntlela. And he is actually thought to have colluded with MSW because he approved several things together with Commissioner Modise. The SIU found evidence of collusion, and we testified at Nshela's disciplinary. So he was dismissed, but he was reinstated in arbitration. But we have followed up with DCS, and they have indicated that they have taken the matter on review. With regards to the civil, we referred evidence to the state attorney requesting that they brief counsel to act on behalf of the SIU with regards to the appointment of MSW. And the release we sought was that the appointment of MSW for the renovation project and the GIAMA project be declared irregular and invalid, and that they be set aside by the court. We are seeking to recover any losses by the department. So during the 2016-2017 financial year, we had quantified an amount of 65 million, which basically spoke to the overpayment that the SIU was aware of at the time. Subsequently, we instituted a review application in the High Court. The SIU is also trying to set aside two appointments made by DCS, the renovation with the value of 183 and one in respect of the GIAMA assessment with a value between 928 or perhaps the reduced value of 474. Furthermore, in addition to the review, we also want MSW to refund DCS for an amount of up to 158 million. Basically, this would be in terms of 102 million, which was paid in respect of the renovation agreement. Alternatively, at least 20.5 million, as indicated previously, the experts found that there was overpayment in respect of one prison, say for example, 9 million for Johannesburg and 11.5 million in respect of three other correctional facilities, as well as the 56 million in respect of the GIAMA conditional assessments, which actually can't even be utilized. The SIU is also asking the court to declare that any outstanding invoices MSW has issued to DCS, being an amount of 104 million, aren't owing and payable by DCS to MSW. So all in all, the contract is valued at 1.2 million, The matter's actually reached the stage where it's ready for trial, and we've been waiting for a trial date. Unfortunately, there has been a turnaround in respect of state attorneys who've been dealing with this matter, but we will be applying for a trial date on the 15th of November, which is just in 2 weeks' time. So this matter is finalized, and only the civil litigation is ongoing. The final presidential report was delivered to the presidency on the 8th of June, 2018. In terms of systemic recommendations, some are similar to those of EFS, namely like not complying with Section 217. So there wasn't a fair competitive, transparent process, especially by utilizing Regulation 16A6. And participating in the Higher Education SLA. And basically, if CCS had a legitimate need for renovations or GIAMA assessments, they could have relied on the existing SLA, which they had with IDT, in order to do this work. And it would have been far more cost effective. So it's recommended that in future, CCS utilizes the services of the IDT. Given the fact that both the appointments of MSW in respect of the renovation in GIAMA were in contravention of the applicable law, all expenditure incurred would be regarded as irregular expenditure, and it's recommended in future that DCS actually complies with the relevant sections of the PFMA, because this causes extensive financial loss to the department. They also incorrectly relied on the provisions of Regulation 16A6 in the sense that they didn't actually look at the duration, the scope, and the cost of the higher education department, because they're supposed to be exactly the same as the what was needed by DCS. So in future, if DCS wants to participate or so-called piggyback on a contract, it needs to ensure that the duration, scope, and cost is the same. So just from our observations, we have noted that DCS has historically been underspending in its facilities program, and this may be due to lack of planning, but it is definitely something that they need to look at. The identification of the renovation project is tainted in the sense that it was primarily done so that DCS doesn't return 800 million to Treasury, but if they had planned properly, particularly under the facilities program, this wouldn't necessarily have been the case. As we said, they have breached various national treasury practices. And from the perspective of the SIU, the fact that DCS has been historically underspending in the facilities program and the failure of the DCS to spend $812 million in the 2013-2014 in a timely manner shows that there's serious maladministration within the affairs of DCS and its gross negligence on the part of the responsible individuals. So non-compliance with the procurement prescripts related to the public sector. Clearly the staff of DCS also need to be more acquainted with what is required. For example, using Regulation 16A6 of the Treasury regulations. This actually what they did. I should just quickly add that for higher education, they were looking at the renovation of certain, they were looking at the renovation and building of about, I think it was 13 tertiary facilities. So they need to, if before utilizing regulation 16A6, they need to make sure that the goods and services required are exactly the same as that procured by the department on which they're wanting to piggyback. Because in this particular instance, it resulted in construction costs, which were not to their benefit, and GIAMA assessments, which they're unable to use. So they really also need to stick to the treasury threshold. They need to stick to the treasury thresholds, which is obviously, 20% of the contract value. Although DCS received permission to participate in the higher education contract, they also failed to notice that they were actually supposed to be dealing with a consortium of 10 companies, but they didn't deal with the MSW consortium, they only dealt with MSW. There was also splitting of purchase orders to avoid having to escalate the purchase order to higher level authorities with in DCS. So basically, they would keep it under 500,000. Accepting an unsolicited proposal in contravention of the Treasury's practice notes, and really the unnecessary outsourcing of work to MSW in respect of the renovations, whereas the IDT provides these exact services to government at a much lower rate. There was also insufficient monitoring and control by the project managers, because they paid for the renovations without actually going to inspect that the renovations were done. And as far as the GIAMA assessments, they paid for the GIAMA assessments without actually confirming with the necessary correctional services that they were utilizing or could utilize those assessments. So clearly they did not receive value for money. So one of the big outcomes here was that the GIAMA assessments were not compliant, and this has resulted in 56 million of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So with regards to what we usually do, and so just preempting, if we have not asked for MSW to be blacklisted. The reason for this is that given the fact that civil proceedings are still ongoing, we can't actually preempt the result of the civil outcome. So we haven't taken any steps to restrict MSW from conducting business on the state, with the state, but once the civil actions have been concluded, we will make the necessary recommendations. So just to summarize, in this matter, there were 4 disciplinary referrals, 2 investigations, being the renovation and the GIAMA. We're currently busy with civil proceedings to the value of 1.2 million, and they have the presidential report has been submitted. Before I go on to the PPE matter, are there any questions with regards to MSW?
Honourable Chair, with your permission, I think although it does reflect on the documents, my colleague said 1.2 million is actually 1.2
billion. Sorry, apologies.
Just a minute. Thank you, Naomi. So, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, as you can see that the recovery process is currently in the High Court. We have applied for the trial. And with, similar to all the matters in the High Court, we really experiencing a low turnaround time, but we believe that, with some interventions where we really object to some of the interlocutory applications and so on, we believe now that the trial will be set. And as my colleague says, we'll ensure that there's consequence management on part of the service providers and all those who are concerned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate Mtibi and Ms. Joza. National Commissioner, and if you can explain to us under which circumstances did Ms. Katanga just receive a written warning? Can you respond to some of the issues that were raised or your observations?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to request Mr. Killian to start off the response.
Thank you, National Commissioner, Chairperson, members. On the issue of Ms. Katanga is actually a witness in the other hearing, but apart from that, at the time when we received the referral, we engaged the SIU because it was our view that Ms. Katanga is actually having information that assists our process, which she provided. And I don't want to go into details because the matter is still going to court. And for that reason, we ended up giving a final written warning, not a written warning as it is indicated there. And like I say, she is a witness in the other case and she is assisting the department wherever she can. In terms of the other matter, it is ongoing. The chairperson is external senior counsel that is in charge of that hearing. And so we are waiting for a date on that one. Thank you, National Commission.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. With regards to the utilization of contracts from other departments, we are now strictly following Treasury regulations, and before we can even contract on those bases, we actually write to National Treasury and seek their guidance with regards to how this is supposed to happen. We also have got an internal audit function in the department that does due diligence before we award any tender as the department. Let me stop there, Honorable Chairperson, with the understanding that Mr. Killian was then able to provide reasons why Ms. Katanga received a final written warning. These are the circumstances that they managed in the years that they are under review with regards to the SIU investigation in this case. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
So these systems you're talking about, were they established after or before the SIU concluded its work and made recommendations?
I will request Mr. Killian to answer the question, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson and Commissioner. Some of the information is when we engaged Ms. Katanga to provide a response why she should not face a formal disciplinary hearing. And some of this information was then shared with the SIU project manager at the time. Who shared our sentiment that she's actually more valuable for us as a witness in the other matter than we placing a formal disciplinary hearing. Thank you, Chair.
National Commissioner, that was not the question. I'm saying that the issues that you are raising, the issues of the audit committee, all the good things that you're talking about now, were they established after or before? I think that was the question. Were you responding to the recommendations of the SIU, or they were already there even before the SIU was through a proclamation given this work to in your department?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Apologies for not getting the question right. These are the observations, Honorable Chairperson, that one is purview to. As one continues to be part of the department. My assumption, Honorable Chairperson, is that they are part of responding to the SIU investigation or implementing the recommendations by the SIU. But as I indicated the acting CFO is on the platform. His substantive position is actually the deputy commissioner responsible for procurement in the department, and I'm sure that he can share more light on this matter.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Members, you can now ask questions or make comments. I've noted Honorable Horn. Yes, Honorable Horn.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I want to also ask questions on in respect of the information shared in slide 49. The Honourable Maseko Jele has previously referred to, and others have also talked about names that are being repeated in these presentations. Now, I want to ask, Mr. Mutibi firstly, but also the department, and make the statement firstly that in my view, if somebody retires from the department rather than resign, then of course you're still in a relationship with the department. So in respect of Mr. Modise, to my mind, it's not quite as simple as saying he's no longer in the employment. So I don't want to know whether that specific aspect has been considered, that he is a retiree of the department. And then secondly, and obviously that quantum will ultimately only be determinable once the civil litigation Mr. Mutibi has referred to is finalized. It is of course also so that if there is then still remaining unrecovered, wasteful and fruitless expenditure, that if there is still that relationship with the retiree, that to my mind it should be permissible and advisable to then look into that direction for recovery. So that's the first statement I really want a response to. The second is, however, Chair, in respect of Ms. Katenga, I want to maybe firstly ask with your permission one question, and if it is then answered in the affirmative, I will have some follow-ups, and that is whether there is a familial relationship with the Chief Deputy Commissioner, Mr. Joseph Katenga. To the best of my knowledge, his portfolio is strategic management in the department.
So you would want to answer now, I guess.
Well, preferably, Chair, and then if it is in the affirmative, I have some follow-ups or further questions.
National Commissioner.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I have asked this question before, and the answer was that they are not related. So I did not go further to investigate that part. This is the question that I've just asked before, and that was the answer that I was given.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner. Honorable Horn.
Yes, Chair, for now I will accept that then. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Advocate Nkige.
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Horn. I think that question is really so, so critical because, you know, this is a phenomenon that we are seeing, that people would retire and resign, and more often they really get away with it. So I think Dr. Wells from our legal section, we have made sure, Honorable Chair and Honorable Horn, that we really don't let the phenomenon continue so that people get away with not paying. So Dr. Wells, if you can just indicate from a legal perspective, once the quantum is determined, what would be the next processes, just so that the Honorable Committee is aware of the consequences that we will take.
Honorable members and Honorable Chair, thank you, Advocate Mutibi. As previously indicated, there is a pending matter where the just and equitable relief will be determined by the court. And we absolutely, as Advocate Mutibi indicated, that we have not lost sight that we can recover from the various officials. In this case, this will also be a possibility and potential against the estate of the deceased. But as at this point in time, the quantum has not been determined. But that possibility do exist, and we do consider that as an option to recover all damages, losses suffered by the department. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just a slight correction. Of course, if any member is deceased, yes, we will also pursue the estate. But in this case, I'm not sure if there's anyone who is reported deceased, but the principle is we will follow up against them individually, or in case of the deceased, against the estate. Thank you, Dr. Wells.
Thank you, Advocate Mchibi. I think we are done now. I think with the time left, how much time would you need for the PPEs?
Honorable Chair, I just really looked at the slides, and I've been in contact with my colleague, Ms. Jose, because with this, if you recall, Chair, we have presented the PPE, this part, before. And it is also in the final report that we submitted to the President. So the real facts have really not changed. For example, if you go to slide number 5, please, the value of the contract is 53.2 million, and we have subsequently established that the actual value of the 25 contracts is 46 million. And then we go into what is it that we determined. In a sense, saying the procurement process was irregular, and we do, outline. So, Honorable Chair, I need, of course, be responding to your question. So it will be very short. It could probably take not less than 10 minutes for Ms. Jose to really focus on the outcomes and the status of the referral. Just so that the committee can be appraised of that.
Yes. I think that assists if we focus on the outcomes and the status of the referral.
Yes.
Yes, we can do that,
sir.
Thank you, Chair. Well, this matter was referred to us in 2020. As you know, R23 was issued to investigate the irregular procurement of PPE matters. So with regards to DCS, we looked at 25 companies and the value was 53.2. Basically, there was a lot of SEM irregularities. In the sense that the procurement process was not fair and competitive in the procurement of PPEs, and hence it was in contravention of Section 217. And there's no available evidence that DCS sourced quotations from suppliers. It would, in many of the contracts, it seems as though only one supplier was contacted to provide quotations. The SPD forms were completed and they were sent to DCS after the deliveries were made, sometimes even after the suppliers were paid, which is obviously a risk for DCS. Suppliers were awarded work without appearing possible conflicts of interest. So also the issue is of the CSD report and the tax compliance. So in many instances, we found that suppliers had actually not submitted their tax bin and their CSD reports. And in some instances, this information was only obtained after the services were rendered or after these suppliers were paid. So there was no enforcement in terms of the dates. And as we know, the PPEs, in many cases, they relied on urgencies that had to be provided by a certain date. And in many of these instances, it could be weeks or months later that it was provided. The CFO, who is currently suspended, approved all quotations above 500,000, which was his emergency delegation.
And during an interview with the CFO, he indicated that he'd received verbal approval by the acting national commissioner. So from my investigations, it appears that the deviations were verbally approved by former Commissioner Fraser, and only signed months after the suppliers were paid. There also wasn't any proper record keeping in terms of delivery notes. So it was difficult for the SIU to establish whether or not the goods paid for were actually received. So, but we did investigate all allegations received from the whistleblower with regards to the irregular SEM processes. And as you said, we found the processes to be irregular. And one of the issues, matters which came in, was an issue of mattresses, which was actually needed by, you know, for the correctional facilities. But the need for fire retardant mattresses had existed since May 2019. And DCS couldn't procure it due to budget constraints. So the available evidence indicates that these mattresses were actually procured with COVID-19 funding, even though they weren't a COVID-19 commodity. And we had spoken to the Deputy Commissioner of Healthcare, who advised that they didn't require fire retardant mattresses. What they required was mattresses which could be washed and decontaminated using liquid sanitizers. So it was established that the quarantine team requested the procurement of mattresses with water-resistant covers. However, the procurement manager requested a quotation for fire-retardant mattresses. So here we see instances of where superiors ask their juniors to actually change the request. So juniors are perceived to be adhering to requests, but you know, seniors are actually abusing their authority. So DCS sourced these mattresses directly from the manufacturers, and you know, we weren't able to establish the prices given the fact that they didn't compare provide the SIU with comparable prices in that regard. But we completed the investigation of the 25 matters, and we are considering civil action against 8 of the companies. The final presidential report was submitted on the 10th of December. In terms of outcomes, we made 4 disciplinary referrals in respect of 18 contracts. So basically for the dereliction of duty, misconduct and negligence in performance of their official duties. Once again, one of the officials has resigned, and the disciplinary hearings against the remaining officials is ongoing, and the next date for hearing is the 5th to the 8th December. With regards to administrative referrals, we made referrals to the Competition Commissioner in respect of 3 service providers, and that's being dealt with by the Competition Commission. With regards to systemic recommendations, we highlighted that amongst others, obviously there are shortcomings with regards to procurement. And as part of its value chain, the SIU now offers a prevention and advisory service to state institutions. So this initiative is aimed at assisting the state institution to prevent an occurrence of serious maladministration. So we want to proactively influence systemic and behavioral root causes of maladministration, fraud, and corruption. And, you know, with respect to the SIU fields, that this can be achieved by leveraging the SIU's finding and experiences in its investigations, with the output being a
systemic improvement. So basically, we would assist the department in coming up with a systemic improvement plan, which we will prepare in conjunction with DCX. So against this background, the SIU is of the view that we can actually add value to DCS by conducting targeted awareness campaigns. And the objectives would be to look at the finalized investigations and recommendations and meet face-to-face interactions with the relevant officials and alert them as to systemic and other shortcomings, so that they can actually take meaningful measures and close the gaps which, you know, are open to abuse and exploitation. So what we would like to do is to create awareness around how to prevent a reoccurrence of what occurred, especially during, you know, instances like the pandemic, which was a free-for-all as far as procurement went. Okay, so like we said, we would like to invariably meet with the individual who are in charge of SEM and policies to put them on an improved corporate governance trajectory. Some of our observations, not only at DCS, but just generally with regards to the PPS investigations, was that because of the serious nature of the PPEs, many of the officials would say that this prevented them from following the procurement process. However, this is a bit of an excuse because Treasury ensured that there were very reasonable guidelines in place to ensure that if there was an urgent need to procure PPE, this was balanced by the constitutional prescripts and any SEM. So there's actually no merit raised in that regard. It was also observed that fraud, corruption, and general malfeasance in the procurement area affected the award of contracts and purchase orders. So, you know, with the procurement processes being flouted, it was not fair, equitable, transparent, as is required by Section 217. We also observed instances of undue influence where undue influence was placed on SEM officials by senior officials and the executive authority, which resulted in irregular awards being made to preferred service providers. For example, the instances of the mattresses. But that also occurred with regards to things like gloves, masks, etc., where an SEM manager, etc., would inform a junior official to change an order. So during our investigation, one of the things of concern is that there isn't really segregation of duties. So you have one official being responsible for multiple tasks, so there's no checks and balances. And this leaves the system very open to, it's very vulnerable to abuse by unscrupulous officials. And we should also take note that what's of concern is that SEM officials didn't actually familiarize themselves with the content of the National Treasury instruction notes. And in many instances, when we interviewed them, they were unaware of the limits of the what constituted a PPE, etc. So during the course of the investigation, we also noted that not necessarily DCS, but like many departments were like a law unto themselves, and they ignored the prescripts which govern the procurement by the state, by the National Treasury. So just to summarize the outcomes, with regards to the DCS PPEs, we made referrals for 4 disciplinary actions. There were referrals for 3 administrative. We completed 25 investigations and a report was submitted to the presidency. I don't know if you have any questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. That's the presentation on the PPEs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, how much time do you think we should have? Firstly, how many are traveling from the parks to Parliament? How many people? I see none, which means we can still proceed. Before I note hands, National Commission, do you want to make some comments?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. With regard to the issue of the supply chain management, the policies and internal control measures, specifically the issue of the segregation of duties that we have addressed as a department, I must also indicate, Honorable Chairperson, that yes, it is confirmed that we have disciplinary processes still proceeding with regards to the other three staff members. And I would like to reaffirm the findings and the outcomes and observations by the SIU, and we'll work together with the SIU with regards to the training that the SIU has indicated should be given to our supply chain management officials. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Jele, followed by Honorable Horn, and then Honorable Nivo to sign that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Hi, Chair, I only have one comment. This report is for 2020, during the time when we were busy with the state capture, when people were aware from everywhere that corruption is not is dealt with all over. Now in 2020, we still have people who are still involved in corruption. Chairperson, I rest my case. The department, these officials that are working here have no remorse, have no respect for the law. So the only thing that I think Chairperson must be done overall, we have to have a seminar maybe of morals, of assisting people talking about the morals, because it seems as if our moral value is too low. Chairperson, in 2020, we are saying corruption is we're going anyway. So lastly, Chairperson, is that those officials that are abusing their power, Chair, I think we must do something. Because if the report says the junior officials are getting into trouble because of senior officials giving them such instructions, but the law is clear. If these people will also agree in doing wrong things, they will continually be punished. Okay? But in short, I want to say, hey, the unions, we must also involve the unions, because this issue of people having to be suspended with a pay and also the issue of tracking when we go to the consequence management, it is not...
You are breaking up.
Okay, Chair. I was saying, I think we must also strategically, hence I was suggesting for the seminar, also with the union. Because, Chair, this is not something that we are going to win. This battle is not going, we are not going to win. I'm not sure, but we will reframe the whole thing and see. Even going into details with this report on my side, I feel I don't have anything to say for now, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Jele. Honorable Horn.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly, I just want to hear from the SIU whether they accepted the explanation that there was a verbal approval, I think, as the presentation states it, from the then National Commissioner. I can't claim to be an absolute expert on public procurement, but the way I understand it is that the accounting authority, the National Commissioner, wouldn't have the authority to even in writing approve this type of deviation. I think some mention has been made to the fact that some departments obviously claimed that this was an emergency situation. But to my mind, it's actually quite clear that the CFO could not have believed, given the requirements for somebody to be appointed as the CFO, that a mere even a verbal or even in writing approval of this type of procurement would be in compliance with the Public Finance Management Act. So that brings me to the second point, Chair, and that is to request from the department an updated information as to what is the situation now with the disciplinary hearing of the CFO. I don't know whether his suspension disciplinary hearing includes or rests on this specific procurement, or whether other issues are also involved, but I think it's now time for us to also ask for an update in respect of that disciplinary hearing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Horn. Honourable Lebo Trochan.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. And thanks again to the SIU. I would like to understand, in relation to the SCM staff and the senior staff, so if a junior ignores an instruction from a senior, then surely they would have to be disciplined for insubordination, and surely they would not have a choice but to follow the instruction of the senior official. So I would like to understand, is the department putting both the junior and the senior officials through disciplinary hearings? And yes, we understand that the junior official violated the instructions. But then if this junior official later becomes a senior official, I mean, they would have to understand that they cannot breach such laws. So really what I want to know is that are both officials going to be disciplined? And then the official who resigned, was he or she in the junior or senior position? I would then like to know, in terms of the fire breach, were all the equipment, all the mattresses, were all of them fireproof? And why I ask if all of them were fireproof, because then, you know, it would mean that the department, you know, really took a huge risk then to have fireproof mattresses, and then, you know, being able to sanitize them, knowing that we're in the middle of a pandemic. So it would have been a very huge health risk as well. So, I mean, that kind of action would not have been appropriate at all. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Neville Trochan. Maybe let me start with the National Commissioner. The questions that were asked by Honorable Horn and Honorable Nivod Trochan, I take it that Mahmoud Jale, you're making a comment. Let's proceed. Yes, proceed.
Yes, it was just a comment, Chair.
Yes, okay. Mr. Commissioner.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On the issue of the junior and the senior with regard to SCM and whether all are taken through disciplinary processes, that is the case, yes, with regards to the outcome of the investigation on the PPEs. And the, on the issue of following on the staff that has resigned, we are, of course, as I have indicated earlier, we are cooperating with law enforcement with regards to the referrals by the SIU on this matter with regards to providing all the information that is needed. There are other issues that were raised by Honorable Nivo Drechen. I'm going to request the acting CFO to then complete our response on them.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Chairperson and Honorable Members and the National Commissioner. In terms of the issue of the mattresses, yes, it is correct that the mattresses were fire resistant, Chair, and that was the specification that was requested at a particular point in time, and that the supplier owners and deliver those particular mattresses based on that particular request. I'll stop there, Chair. Thanks.
I think Honorable Horn asked about the suspended finance of Chief Financial Officer. How far is that suspension? Whether there have been any disciplinary processes against him, how far are they?
The disciplinary processes are still on, Honorable Chairperson. In the report, it is indicated that there is a sitting that will be taking place as part of the continuous processes in the month of December this year.
Okay. Honorable Horn, are all your questions answered?
Yeah, I did also ask whether this specific issue is included in the suspension and hearing. Maybe we can just get a confirmation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Yes, this issue is included. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. There is also a question by Honorable Nivot Drochan, whether the official that has resigned, is he or she a senior or a junior official?
Can I request the acting CFO to answer the question, Honorable Chairperson?
That's fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, National Commissioner. The person that has resigned was a deputy director, junior staff member, and he only resigned because it was due for pension. So he left because of the pension.
He retired.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Joseph? Hi. One of the questions asked by the Honorable Nivo Drifun was whether the juniors were also disciplined with the seniors. No, they weren't. The all four officials who were being disciplined were senior officials, the ones who gave the instructions and who breached the PFMA.
Okay. I hope you answered, Honorable Nivo Drifun.
Yes, Chair.
Thank you very much. Advocate Mtebi, I think we're left with four proclamations now. Am I correct?
Yes, Chair. On the DCS, we're left with the fencing and the part at the KwaZulu-Natal part of the DCS. The others are those old ones, which we just thought appropriate to include for completeness. But actual presentations, we're left with two, the DCS part.
Okay. Members, what is a suggestion should, because now we are at 10 past 12, and when I asked whether there are any members who are traveling to the house, there was no response. Should we end here or can we proceed until 1? To take this few so that we are done with the DCS. What is your, I mean, your hands, what is your view?
I don't know what time the buses leave, Chair.
When I asked for that, the buses are supposed to be leaving at 12:30, but I got a sense from members that they might be joining virtually because nobody responded to my question. Honorable Nipotroham.
Honorable Chair, I wanted to say that, you know, I don't want us to rush through this, you know, in terms of getting the presentation and the questions. So I don't know if the rest of the proclamations and the questions, are we going to rush through it and get to 1 o'clock, or, you know, are we going to postpone for another day where we have ample time to discuss this?
Okay, thank you. Honorable Jelia?
Okay. I thought that maybe if Advocate Chibi can inform us as to which amongst those that he has got the shortest, that we can deal with it maybe before 1 o'clock.
Okay. Thank you very much. Advocate Chibi, is there the fencing one? Is it a long one?
I could actually suggest, and thank you for that, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I could suggest that the KZN part would actually be very focused. It's been completed as well, and then we'll probably focus on the outcomes and status of the outcomes. We're working very well with the DCS on that one to implement the outcomes.
Okay, so It is not long.
No, it's not long, Honorable Chair.
Okay, thanks. Advocate Mashabane, DJ.
Thanks, Chair. I was wondering whether there's a real chance of any presentation on justice. If not, I wanted to ask to be excused, but my colleagues, senior officials, will continue to stay until you conclude.
No, I think that is fine, DJ. Thanks for gracing this meeting. I think that is fine. I don't think we will deal with any justice matters today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. So members, can you just take this one? It's not long, and then but we will adjourn it one so that members can have lunch.
Yes, Chair. Support it.
Advocate Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, in terms of the presentations, that would be the one starting on slide. If you can take us to slide 102, please. And Mr. Johnny Chetty, I hope you are on the platform.
I am, sir.
Lovely. Thank you very much. As you have heard, please, as you also demonstrated in the preparations, be pointed and just focus on the, you know, focus areas, outcomes, and the status of implementing the outcomes. Thank you so much, and thank you for showing your face.
Certainly, sir. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Advocate Motibi and my colleagues from the SIU, thank you for the opportunity to present the SIU's feedback, specifically on Proclamation R10 of 2018. Next slide, please. The investigations started In 2018, it was duly concluded in 2019. The mandate was as per Presidential Proclamation R10 of 2018, which was published on the 6th of April 2018. The mandate was to investigate the procurement and contracting of goods and services related to perishable provisions, food, toiletries, catering, and marquee hire, as well as coal by the Department of Correctional Services. And this occurred during the period 1st of January 2012 and the date of publication of the proclamation, which was the 6th of April 2018. Next slide, please. The investigation emanated from a request for assistance received by the SIU from the DCS relating to allegations of corruption and tender irregularities within the KZN region. This was as a result of an anonymous complaint received by the DCS regarding the said allegations, and it was duly received by the department's departmental investigation unit, which conducted a preliminary assessment, and a report was presented by the DIU to the SIU to take further. Pursuant to this, to the receipt of the DIU's report, the National Commissioner of the DCS at the time requested the SIU to conduct a full investigation, at which stage a motivation was done to the President for a proclamation. Next slide, please. Our focus areas was clearly the procurement of perishable provisions by the department, as well as events relating to marquee hire for the department. Next slide, please. Our general findings in our investigations, we found a flagrant disregard for legislation, policies, procedures, codes of conduct, treasury regulations by senior officials of the KZN DCS. Several service providers were also found to have defrauded the DCS, which resulted in the SIU making recommendations to the NPA. There was evidence of transgressions of the POCA Act, and these resulted in recommendations to the AFU of the NPA. There was evidence of possible tax evasion, which was referred to the South African Revenue Services, and recommendations were made to DCS to blacklist certain providers, service providers, due to the actions during the bidding process. Next slide, please. The outcomes in relation to the SIU's investigations, in as far as NPA referrals are concerned, 16 referrals were made to the NPA between June 2019 and December 2019. These were against six entities and their directors. The offenses range from fraud, including false documentation, TCCs, triple BE certificates, inferior products where non-SABS products were found to have been supplied to the department, and so forth. The status on these matters: one matter was declined by the NPA due to there being no reasonable prospects of a prosecution. Investigation by the DPCI on one matter, this is the Hawks, to obtain further statements from witnesses are underway. The prosecutor is awaiting information from SARS at the NPA's request on two of the matters. Follow-up meetings between the NPA, the DPCI, and the SIU are ongoing on one of the matters via a press briefing CAS. There are further follow-up meetings between the three agencies, which are ongoing in respect of 11 matters via a press briefing CAS 4 of 12-2020. Next slide, please. Disciplinary referrals. In total, the SIU made 22 referrals for disciplinary action between the September 2019 and August 2020. Referrals were made against the regional commissioner, deputy regional commissioner, and directors who served as members of the Special Bid Adjudication Committee, against the regional coordinator, SCM, regional coordinator, special programs and administrator, SCM, and provisional administrator, SCM. There were various contraventions in terms of the SMS handbook, contravention of the Public Service Code of Conduct, contravention of National Treasury regulations. The status at this point in time, and this has been ongoing feedback request between the SIU and Director Killian from the DCS, which has been going very well. We have been advised that the disciplinary hearing against the regional commissioner was converted to pre-dismissal arbitration proceeding in terms of Section 188 of the Labor Relations Act. The regional commissioner was found not guilty on all of the charges related to the tenders in an award from the GPSSBC. However, this was not accepted by the DCS, and a review application was filed in the Labour Court, which is currently pending. In addition, this is in light of the fact that the not guilty findings was based on a technicality and not as a result of the evidence by the SIU. In addition, seven officials were given final written warnings in terms of a plea bargaining agreement, and this was on a condition that they would testify in the disciplinary hearing against the regional commissioner. One official involved in the event contracts was given a final written warning and has since been transferred to the DCS Eastern Cape office. Next slide, please. Additional outcomes, blacklisting, six blacklisting referrals were made between October 2019 and December 2019. This was against five entities and their directors and the additional one entity and its director. This was the irregularities related to fraud by these service providers. These were submitted to the department to initiate administrative action in terms of PERJA. The National Commissioner delegated the matters to the CFO, or National Commissioner at the time, delegated the matters to the CFO for action. We've been advised, however, that the CFO has been suspended on a separate PPE-related matter. We've been advised by Director Killian from Code Enforcement that follow-up is being conducted in respect of the progress with those matters for blacklisting. SARS referrals, we've made two referrals to SARS, one on, in December 2019 and the other on the third in March 2020. The first referral was against an entity and its directors, and the other referral was against the regional commissioner. The irregularities related to fraudulent tax clearance certificates and non-disclosure of source of funds or income. Both these matters are under review by SARS. AFU referral, there were three referrals made to the asset forfeiture unit between February 2020 and, or all actually in February 2020. There were two referrals against the two entities and their directors and one referral against the regional commissioner. The irregularities related to fraud, undisclosed assets and possible money laundering. The status on those matters, they are under review by the asset forfeiture unit. There's ongoing consultation between the AFU, the NPA, and the SIU in relation to the matter against the regional commissioner. The NPA and DPC are also engaging at a national level with the task team in relation to revelations from the Zondo Commission's report linking the regional commissioner to unlawful payments received. finally, systemic recommendations. We've made one systemic recommendation in October 2020. Relating to SCM processes by the DCS. These have been submitted to the DCS for implementation. The National Commissioner directed these matters to the CFO for implementation. However, as indicated earlier, the CFO was suspended due to disciplinary proceedings. Director Killian, again, has committed to follow up on the recommendations and the implementation in the department, and he will advise us further on that. Next slide, please. As far as civil litigation is concerned, we've referred a matter to the state attorney. Our two matters submitted on the 15th of September 2020 against two entities and their directors. The description of the matter was payments processed to service providers by DCS as a result of fraud or misrepresentation in the documentation submitted during the procurement process by the suppliers. The status of these matters, one referral to the value of 20.6 million, grants for 11 contracts awarded to one service provider. Council has been briefed and signed particulars of claim for 2.8 million rand as the quantum that could be claimed back. Summons has been served, however, the matter is being opposed by the supplier. One referral to the value of 6.1 million rand relating to one service provider was eventually closed due to the company liquidation. The liquidation status order was checked and it was been made final on the 29th of January 2021 under case number 7175 of 2020. Investigations closed, a total number of 21 investigations closed due to finalization in February 2020. Next slide, please. The observations during the course of our investigation, we noted that the BAC often rejected the BEC recommendations without referring the matter or the bid for re-evaluation. The BAC awarded tenders to suppliers other than those recommended by the BEC, and in doing so failed to report same to the National Commissioner, which is contrary to the SCM User Manual of 2011. In some cases, no reasons were supplied by the BAC for rejecting the BEC recommendations. Bids in excess of 10 million rand were awarded contrary to delegated powers. Goods supplied were not in line with mandatory requirements, for example, non-SABS approved goods. There was no verification process by DCS on documentation submitted by suppliers, example TCCs and triple BE certificates. Bid documents were dated after the closing date. My apologies for that. Bids supplied were not in line with mandatory requirements. There were no verification processes. Bid documents were dated after the closing date of bids. Financial analysis showed that an official had accumulated vast wealth and had failed to declare their source of funds and or assets. Certain suppliers were being favored over others. Audio recordings of minutes of BAC meetings were not kept. Minutes of BAC meetings were either inaccurate, incomplete or unsigned by the chairperson, and therefore systemic recommendations were necessary to remedy certain SCM breaches and to reduce recurrences in the future. Next slide, please. The summary of our outcomes, broadly, I did mention the civil litigation where the quantum was 2.6 million rand. That would come in as potential cash to be recovered as we conclude our civil litigation. We referred a total of 22 matters for disciplinary action against officials. Nine matters were referred for administrative action, which would include the SARS referrals and referrals for blacklisting and so forth. There were 19 referrals made to the relevant prosecuting authority, the NPA. 21 investigations were closed under the proclamation. Civil litigation lodged in the special tribunal amounted to 26.8 million, and we have concluded and submitted one report to the presidency. Next slide, please. Our final report was submitted to the presidency on the 26th of February, 2021. I thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and my colleagues. Advocate Mativi.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chetty. Honorable Chair, that's the presentation on the KZN DCS part. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much, Advocate Mtribi and Mr. Chetty and National Commissioner.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to request Mr. Killian to quickly summarize our response. He has been working on this matter.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, National Commissioner. Maybe just to add that the matter that Mr. Chetty referred to on the review is pending in the Labour Court. So we cannot say much about that at this stage. In terms of the issues that we committed to provide feedback, we have been following up. It was a bit difficult because the things were referred to the CFO at the time. But we have been engaging with the acting CFO on the issue of the blacklisting and the process of the sustaining recommendations. And the CFO is actually present with me. So, Commissioner, if you'll allow me that Mr. The acting CFO just talks to that quickly.
Proceed, acting CFO.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. In terms of the systematic recommendation that were made by SIU, we've implemented all of them, and one of the systematic recommendation is that the issue of the bid award and adjudication is not taking place in the region itself, which is the region KZN. So we've changed the delegation, so it's taking place within the head office so that we overcome those particular findings that were raised by SIU. And in terms of the list of suppliers where the listing has been recommended. I've managed to resuscitate that particular process, and we're now communicating with National Treasury to ensure that we implement those particular recommendations that were made by SIU. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. National Commissioner, are you done?
Yes, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Members, any comments or questions? Honorable Jayle.
Thank you very much. I thought that maybe the response that you're going to get from the DGS was that they give
Sorry, Honorable Jayle, your network is dead, is that?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, that's better.
Yes, I was just saying the response from the DCS, I thought that maybe we were expecting something like they should give us a closing. And
we can't hear you at all, Honorable Jere. Honorable Jere? I think let's proceed. I think the network is bad on her side. I think for now, Advocate Mchibi, are we done with all correctional services issues?
Honorable Chair, we're left with one presentation that we have planned to make, which is the fencing, the fencing one on the DCS site. It might take a while. The rest, which is really the older proclamations, like the one of 2002 up to 2004, and the 2007 one, and the R44 of 2007. We included those really for completeness so that the Honorable Committee can have a complete view. But in particular, the 2007 one, which is where there were various procurements, the Honorable Committee would be aware that it has in particular attracted public interest simply because there had not been consequence management, in particular on the criminal side. But we have seen the prosecution now, and this is where the company Busasa is involved. So we are satisfied that now the prosecution is underway, and all of those who were pointed and implicated are being held to account. So the only one that's left is the one on the fence, the fence procurement. So that would be the active presentation that we will make, Honorable Chair.
Okay. Can I suggest that when we come back, we have early in January, when we come back, we schedule the MPA, SIU and the Hawks as planned. Firstly, I think with respect to those that have been done today, if Committee Secretary, you can communicate with MPA and the Hawks that in that meeting, they will first need to update us on the progress that has been made on the presentations that were made today. And then after that, the SIU will take us through the remainder of the presentations. Including the justice presentations. So we will have to decide. I think I liked the communication that we that was there between SIU and the committee. I would ask that Advocate Mchibi, if you can also give us those timelines that you gave us, so that we will decide whether it will be for 1 day or for 2 days. Okay. Because we would want to give you enough time. And so if we can, yes, if we can get that revised timeline from your side, so that we can be able to know whether we should schedule it for 2 days or for 1 day. Then we would request that as the National Commissioner was present today, if on that day he will be present again with his team and the DG and his team, so that they are able to respond to some of the issues that are raised. And there was also a request that there are certain issues that you said, National Commissioner, you are going to respond in writing in a detailed fashion. So we would request that those come early in the year, so that members can go through them. It does assist, like the SIU has done. We received this presentation timeously, so that we can also go through it. If early in the year, not before we close, because I think members would not be able to read it. I think if we can early in the year, before we start the year, if we can receive that detailed presentation, that would be responding in much more detail to the issues raised. I wouldn't want to have a way forward now or to make observations, because this presentation is still ongoing. It would be better to make a presentation having had all the presentations and to map a way forward. I think for now we are just mapping a progress between now and the time we received all the other presentations. But thank you very much. What we can definitely say is that we are happy with the manner in which SIU and the Department of Correctional Services are working together. You can see that there's really a good cooperation between the two entities. I think you should proceed in that way. I think it's a good spirit of ensuring that we tightened and we consolidate our fight against crime and corruption, which Honorable Jelle has decried very strongly. It's something of serious concern to all South Africans. It's important that it is defeated, because it eats on our moral fiber of our society. It can only be defeated if we are working together. So we are very pleased that Correctional Services and SIU are working very close together. I think keep it up. Thank you very much, members, and to everybody who is on the virtual platform. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you, Moiloop.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.